Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Good morning, and you're listening to What's Next on Buffalo, Toronto Public Media NPR. I am today's host, Artrell Williams, and I've got some information that I really wanted to share with our listening audience today. I recently received a text message from someone who said that they had the wrong telephone number. I got the text, and it was something like, "Hi, Michael, how have you been?" And I said, "This is not Michael." And later on, they responded in a way that said, I'm sorry, but you seem like a nice person. And then they tried to get me to have a conversation. And I was telling one of my friends about that, who happens to be one of our guests today. And she said, "Don't answer them. Don't listen to anything that they have to say." And then went on to explain to me what the end game was, because I figured after a while, I understood that they were trying to do something, but I had no idea what or why. And that's what I want to help explain to our listeners today, because what I know now is that it was probably some type of a financial scam. So I've got two guests in the studio with me today, and I'm going to allow them to introduce themselves and what they do, starting with our first guest, Nicole Clifton. Good morning.
Good morning, Artrell.
So tell us a little bit about what you do and why you are one of the people who can speak to us about that text message that I just mentioned.
I've been in banking for 20 years. Most of that time I have been in anti-money laundering compliance and financial crimes investigations. That's what I've been doing. So I'm very familiar with current fraud trends and the antics of bad actors.
So in your professional role, you are a financial crimes expert.
Yes.
And you've seen a lot of different things. It's happening in a lot of different ways. How did you get into that type of work?
Honestly, it was by accident. When I first started in banking, I was in an officer development program, and we had to do tours in different areas of the bank, and compliance was one of them, and I just enjoyed it, so I stayed.
All right. Thank you for sharing. Next, I have another representative of this financial scams subject matter expert community here, Cynthia Stewart. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role?
Sure. Good morning. I am at UB with the Center for Information Integrity, and also the executive director of a new nonprofit called DART Collective. And we are making tools to help older adults not get scammed quite so often.
A nonprofit organization. So yeah. In addition to your work with UB, it's probably not just a side hustle, right? This is a passion, and you decided that you want to get into helping people through DART.
Yes. And it was an outcome of my work at the center. We originally got a grant that funded this project. And as the project moved along, so originally it was a project under the center. And now we decided we needed to found a nonprofit to keep it going after that grant funded period is over. And I stepped up to take the lead on it because I had fallen in love with it.
So you've got a grant to do some additional work. Can you speak a little more about that work that you guys will be doing with the nonprofit piece of it?
Sure. We're building tools to help older folks not get scammed. We have two tools right now that we are working on. One is already available. It's a mobile game. And it's called Deep Cover. It's available. You can go download it for Apple or Android. And the other is sort of a gamified e-learning platform. So that's aimed at the people that will go to the library, go to the community center, seek out more information. And this is to give them that that information they're looking for, plus a safe place to practice protective behavior. So it's not just read a wall of text or listen to someone, but hands-on practice what being approached by some of those scams looks like and how you should respond.
That's amazing. And I'm going to definitely have to come back to this gamified approach because gamification is something that is kind of near and dear to my heart. I understand why you would take such an approach, and I'd like to help give some additional information about how that helps our listeners. So thanks for sharing, and we'll definitely talk more about that piece of it. I mentioned financial scams, and you both have a lot of information about that. Who's being impacted by these financial scams? Nicole, if you could talk about it from your context in banking, who do you see is being targeted with these scams and who's falling victim to it?
Who isn't being targeted, really? It's unfortunate, but it's just everyone. Everyone's being targeted. A lot of people think it's just elderly or kids these days, but everyone, to your point, you've already gotten a text message. They are targeting anyone who has money. The end.
Or who they think have money.
Who they think has money, yes. Anyone can be a victim, really. All you have to do is slip up just once.
Right. And Cynthia, you mentioned earlier that your nonprofit is to protect the elderly. Is there a specific reason why that's the group that you guys are working with? Or do you also see opportunities to expand that in the future?
We definitely plan to expand in the future. We started with older adults because they are the most targeted. I agree with Nicole. Everybody is targeted. Everybody's a target all the time. But older adults are targeted a whole order of magnitude more frequently than everyone else. And that is because they have more money. They've had a lifetime to accumulate it. And so they're better targets, not because they are, this is something a myth I want to bust, not because they are more vulnerable, but because they have more to lose. Mm. And it hurts them more, not just the financial losses, but they don't have as long to recover from them. So the pain is felt disproportionately by older adults. So we decided to start there, but we definitely plan to expand to other groups when we can.
No. And I may be wrong, but in my mind, I'm thinking that maybe that group is also just a little less familiar with technology and when you mentioned being vulnerable, they may be more vulnerable because of their unfamiliarity with technology and just the fact that people are out there doing this type of thing.
Yes and no. In some ways, that was sort of the conventional wisdom, but the latest research actually shows that the younger generations, the ones who are the most comfortable with technology, fall victim to scams at a higher rate because they trust the technology. In some ways, the fact that older folks are less familiar makes them a little more skeptical of it, which can actually help them out. So yes and no.
Interesting. Now, do you all find that different scams are targeted towards different audiences? Is there a specific one that you see the younger generation falling for more so? Or is it anybody and everybody falling for whatever traps come their way?
I am not as familiar with what is targeted at younger people. I will say just from my personal experience, I noticed an extreme uptick in the number of those weird wrong number text messages I got, or we've lost your package text messages as soon as I turned 50. I suddenly started getting more of them. So they're definitely looking at age groups and targeting their approaches. I think one thing that surprises people is how often romance scams are aimed at older adults. We think that's a younger person thing, but older adults are looking for love and companionship too. And so a lot of that is aimed at them.
Hmm. Now tell me about these romance scams.
Well, that would be very similar. It's what I imagine that text message aimed at you was fallen under a romance, or you might call it a friendship scam. It's not always looking for a romantic relationship. But the scammer will try to approach you any way that they can and then create a relationship, get you talking to them, get you communicating. And if you're on dating apps, they may approach you that way. They're wanting to build that feeling that you have a relationship with them, that emotional bond. And then over time, they will turn it to, oh, I've had this emergency. You're the only one I trust. You're the only one who can help me out. And to build that relationship, they may even send you small gifts so that when they ask you for money, you're like, well, this can't be a scammer because they've sent me presents, right? They've given me things. How can this be somebody who's trying to steal from me? And often, you know, they're the perfect match. They're your, you know, they share all your interests. They're perfect for you.
They have all the right answers.
Yeah. And what you don't know is, since you've never met them in person, they may not be one person. They may be a whole committee of people whose job it is to be the perfect person for you.
Yeah. And that was kind of what Nicole told me about that intrigued me by this whole concept, that this is an industry in which there are people who think this is their job.
Transnational criminal organizations have compounds where they are basically human trafficking people, and those trafficked individuals are forced to commit fraud all day long.
So here I was thinking that I was the potential victim, when in many instances, the person who's trying to do this to me is also a victim of another crime.
Yes.
A related crime. And you mentioned transnational institutions. Tell us more about
transnational criminal organizations.
Transnational criminal organizations. What's that all about?
Essentially, it's your, for lack of a better word, like your cartels, your mob, your mafia, your organizations that do nothing but criminal activity to make money. And they definitely have a corporate structure to it.
It's organized crime.
Yeah, thank you. I was like, what's it called?
And how are these people becoming the victim who's trying to scam us? How do they get caught up in such a thing?
They get lured into fake jobs. Some of it happens in Eastern Asia, and they have job postings. And when individuals come to be hired for the job, they take their passports and then force them into this forced labor compound.
Wow. And that's part of what you guys get a sneak peek or some type of a glimpse into as well, as you fight financial crimes, right, Cynthia?
Yeah. I mean, they have a playbook, a literal script. And I mean, it's like choose your own adventure. If the person you're talking to says A, go to page 53 and say B. And they've tested it out. They know which things will hook you, what's going to get an emotional response and keep you engaged. It's amazing, the level of sophistication.
Hmm. And I was totally unaware of this. I always thought that the scammer on the other end of the line that called me was the person who was intentionally trying to get something from me, when in reality, they may be forced to do this by somebody else. And in some instances, they don't even know that what they're doing is the wrong thing to do, right? It's their job.
They're still trying to get something from you. It's just that now they're being forced to do it.
Right.
And they're pretty sure they know what they're doing, but they don't have a choice.
So what are some of the other misconceptions that people might have about these types of scams?
That's a hard one, because I'm not sure.
If people like myself thought that it's just a person on the other phone. You know, they are sitting in their apartment somewhere and they're like, let me call this random number and see if I can get their checking account information. When in reality, that's not what's happening. And you've got the online scams that are taking place, the telephone scams, like I just mentioned. So there's so much of this that's going on that a lot of people fall for because they don't know why it's happening or how it's happening. So a lot of times there's some type of misconception. They're like, oh, they must be from the cable company. Maybe it's just a person who works at the cable company who's trying to quit his job and he's gone rogue.
I think one misconception people have is that they did something to somehow bring the attack on themselves, because it actually could be random that you got that text. They probably sent that text message to a lot of people at once because the technology allows them to do that. Then they only engage with the ones who respond. So they're not wasting their time. Technology allows them to basically spam their initial come on, and then only the people who are susceptible do they invest any time in. So it could be completely random. There's nothing you did wrong. There's a lot of shame involved in being targeted by a scam, but there's not necessarily anything you did to get that attention. You just happened to be in their sights.
I think another misconception is the platform they use. If the platform is public, it's fair game. And by platform, I mean Facebook, Instagram, social media, games, like Words with Friends. I had somebody contact me through Words with Friends once. Fair game.
Right. So the platform itself shouldn't lend any more credibility to that message that we receive. Just because they called my phone doesn't mean that it was intended for me. Just because they were one of my Facebook friends doesn't necessarily mean that they are the person who they're posing themselves to be and that they have better intentions than we may know, right?
Correct.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, and just because it comes up, I'll add another level of scary to it. Just because a call comes up as being, or a text comes up as being, from someone you do know in the real world doesn't mean it's from them, because they can spoof that phone number. Mm-hmm. So they can call from anywhere or text from any, you know, message, text from anywhere, but make it appear to come from a particular phone number. Now that is a little more targeted at you. Mm-hmm. But just because you know the person in real life, and even if you pick up the phone and it sounds like the person you know in real life, doesn't mean it is. It takes, this is the scariest statistic I know, it takes 3 seconds of audio to convincingly fake a voice. That's from one of my colleagues out at UB who runs the media forensics lab. His name is Siwei Liu. And yeah, he's our deep fake expert. 3 seconds of audio. So if your friend, your favorite grandchild or niece or nephew has ever posted anything on TikTok, there's probably enough of their voice out there for somebody to convince you it's them on the phone.
Wow. So you guys are talking about ways that technology has evolved this industry of scamming. What are some of the other ways that you are seeing technology playing a role in them executing these scams and crimes?
The messaging has gotten a lot better. It used to be you could tell which ones were fake by the grammar or the formatting of the email. Now, it's because of Gen AI, the grammar is on point. The images is almost perfect. It's just hard. It makes it significantly harder to tell, just to pick out.
Hmm. Any other ways that you're seeing technology being used?
I'll say the audio is coming on more, and the deep fake video, so being able to realistically have, you know, imitate someone on a video call, that is not yet really widespread, but it's close. It's going to happen any day now. So yeah, this is somewhere where Siwei and I differ a little bit. He's working with it, and his message to people is it's not perfect. I'm like, yeah, but see, way you're spotting it because you're using algorithms to fight algorithms. I would tell the general public, it's close enough to perfect. Do not assume you can tell the difference. It may be fun to look for and count how many fingers the AI-generated image has, but the fact that it has the right number, you can't tell by looking. So you just have to distrust everything that comes to you via some form of media.
I remember when it used to just be the email scam, but now we've talked about text messaging, Facebook, the emails still exist. There's phone calls that use voices. There's so many ways that they're using technology to perpetrate these crimes. And I don't know if a lot of people really understand just how much this is happening on. Do we have any statistics about how much financial crime? Is there a financial impact that you guys are seeing on your end? Is it, how do we quantify how much of this is going on?
The number I have at the top of my, that I have at my fingertips is from the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center. That is IC3.gov. If anybody needs to report something, that is where one of the places I recommend you report things. They put out a report every year. They have not yet put out the report for 2024. So the figures I have are from 2023. For people over 60, $3.4 billion was lost to scams. And that is just the ones who did report it to the FBI. So you know it's multiply that a few times, and that's how much, and just for that demographic. That is the largest, that is the demographic with the largest losses. But that is up, I've been working on this for about 3.5 years. That is up 114% over that 3.5 years.
Wow.
So, and it's on the rise. It's an exponential curve.
All right. How about dollars? From a banking perspective, is there an amount of dollars that they anticipate? Not really.
I don't have that number.
But we know, as Cynthia mentioned, that it's on the rise. And we know that there's probably billions to trillions of dollars that are tied up in this type of thing on a regular basis.
Yep.
Wow. That's amazing. So what are some of the red flags that people might need to look out for when someone is approaching them, even if it doesn't say anything about giving them money?
I think for me, the two big ticket items is sense of urgency and then the attempt at familiarity when they try to be your friend and it's come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Unknown number, unknown caller, unknown messenger.
Yeah. I would add to that, anything that's coming to you that you didn't ask for.
Not the free iPad?
No, definitely not the free iPad or Trill.
No.
My phone even now says potential scam for some of them. Not all of them end up being a scam. Many times when I answer those calls, though, I do hear a little click before someone starts to speak, or you can tell that the individual who's speaking isn't listening per se, that it's probably a really good recording of someone, but it's not actually someone who's calling you to speak to you. And if you stay on long enough, you may find that they will transfer you to someone, but the person who quote unquote called you wasn't actually on the phone. So you've got this happening. They record somebody's voice and they called how many other people at the same time. And they say, we've got an urgent message for you. Stay on the line. If this is this person, press one or something to that effect. But they can do it mass produced now.
Yeah.
And I think, Nicole, you told me something about these large buildings that they have in other places that are basically big chops, sweatshops, call centers in which they've trafficked people to do these crimes, right?
Yeah, in Myanmar, they had built several casinos right around 2020. And when the pandemic hit, all that got shut down. So they repurposed the buildings to be these compounds for financial crime.
What are some of the steps that institutions are taking to prevent this type of thing?
I don't know that it's prevent. I know that there's some education pieces that institutions have going on where they try to educate. I know I've seen one of my own personal banks sent an email about, we are extensive email about how they'll never ask for all this list of information to warn you in advance that if someone proclaiming to be us asked you for this information, it's not really us. So they definitely ramping up the education piece and the outreach.
Multi-factor authentication, needing to prove who you are multiple different ways. If it's annoying, it's probably because they're trying to prevent scams.
So when the cable provider asks me for my PIN and they ask me for some other information and they ask me for my address or something like that, it's not because they're trying to be annoying. They want to make sure that they are speaking with the person who they claim it's supposed to be, because fraud can take place,
right,
if they don't do these things.
And you always want to, again, you always want to be sure you called them, not they called you, because if they called you, then all of those things they're trying to get is your personal information so they can impersonate you. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen a lot more messaging about, and this is just echoing something Nicole said, that companies, legit companies, will not ask you. They will not call you first. They will wait for you to call them. They will reach out to you some other way. If there is some weird situation that they do need to call you, they're going to welcome you being suspicious and saying, great, but I have to call you back. And I'm going to go look up the number and call my local bank branch, or I'm going to call, you know, my credit card from the number on the back of the card. They will welcome that. Anybody that doesn't is not legitimate. The government, no government agency is going to call you. They are mostly old school. They will do snail mail. You will get a letter in the post, in the mailbox. Anybody, there's a lot more of that messaging. I think that companies are trying to make sure you know how they will and will not communicate with you. Which is, they, you know, it's just teaching people best practices of don't interact with anybody who doesn't act this way.
I really appreciate the insight that you guys have given me so far. I'm in the studio with Nicole Clifton and Cynthia Stewart, and we're talking about financial scams and crimes. We discussed the different ways that these crimes are being perpetrated, how they're being perpetrated, why they're being perpetrated. And it makes me think about a recent situation that I had with an elderly couple that fell for an online scam. I remember seeing those types of emails that say, we will never ask you for this type of information. I've gotten it in text. I've gotten it in emails where an organization will let you know not to respond if you see certain things in the email. But a lot of times people don't know what to look for or know who's legit and not legit. This elderly couple was trying to get some technical support, and they reached out to what looked like a legitimate website. They went to Google or something like that, put in tech support for the organization that they were looking for. Somehow it ended up going to someone who wasn't that organization. And I've heard that you can look at the domain name in the search bar at the top of the screen, and sometimes you'll see that it's different than where you're trying to go. So if you're trying to go to HP for your computer stuff or Dell or something like that, and you see something before you see Dell, it may not be the legitimate site. And some of those sponsored ads could potentially be from people who've just paid to be first in the list, but not necessarily the people who you're trying to get to. In this instance with the elderly couple, though, they reached out to what they thought was technical support. They got technical support on the line and then ended up giving up information that allowed these people to remote into their computer. And those people tried to get into their bank account. And then it becomes a whole new ordeal about how do you change your passwords for everything? What do you need to do with that bank account? Did they actually take any of your money? And this is the type of thing that you guys are seeing on a regular basis, right? From a banking perspective, what are you all seeing that shows that people are falling for these scams, and how should they respond once they've done that?
Unfortunately, there's not anything that we see on the front end that is reflective or indicative of that type of activity. We see it after it's already happened, or we hear about it after it has already happened. And usually it's called account takeover. Usually it is reported by the client. that they have been a victim of that type of activity. And it's unfortunate, but that's definitely a, we only find out after.
Is it too late at that point? Is the money gone?
Usually, unfortunately, yes. Wow. Once the money's left their account, there's very little recourse, depending on how it's left their account. Like if they did a, it's called a real-time payment, which is your Venmos, your Cash Apps, your Zelles. If they do that kind of transfer, the money's gone.
Wow. Now, Cynthia, you work to educate the public about these things and hopefully prevent it before it ever happens. Tell me about what you're seeing on your end.
Several red flags in the scenario you just described, and you summed up a lot of them very well. Looking at the URL, but there's ways they can be very, very tricky about that. The best thing to do is, you know, if you know you want to go to Microsoft.com, type it in yourself. Always scroll down past those paid ads because you don't know who those folks are. With the tech support, there's lots of ways those tech support things come at you. They can be pop-up ads if you don't have a pop-up blocker. Or you say the couple you described, they actually did reach out to somebody. It just wasn't the right. It was just, you know, the bad guys. The pop-up ones, I actually learned something that I did not realize. Our instinct pop-up ad is to click that little X in the top corner to close it. But sometimes those things, the whole thing is basically a hyperlink. The whole thing is a button. And if you try to close it, all you've done is given it permission to do whatever it is it was coded to do. Download malware, put trackers on your device. So the best thing to do if you get a pop-up of something like that is to just close the browser. Don't interact with it at all.
Wow. So you said the device, you're not just talking about their computer, but they're doing these to our phones too?
Yep.
Wow. What role do you think institutions like schools or maybe even churches or libraries should play in preventing these scams?
I think they're doing what they, you know, they're trying very hard, especially I got a shout out to librarians. Librarians are heroes. They are doing everything they can think of to try to get education to people. The difficulty is people are overconfident. They're sure that they're too smart to be scammed, or they already know that. I mean, we all know, don't click suspicious links. We've heard it before, and it bears repeating because they catch you in that off guard moment. So education only works if they get to you before the scammer does. And unfortunately, a lot of people only want the education after they or somebody they know has been a victim. And so that creates some difficulty that people don't want to make the time for it. But schools, library, they're trying to educate people. They are, and getting people to pay attention to it is the challenge.
So if we could change a thing about the scam landscape, what could it be? What is it that we might be able to do to make this less accessible and much more difficult for those that are trying to do it while keeping us as a community from falling victim to it?
Vigilance. Just stay vigilant, stay on your toes, stay alert, just pay attention. That's the best advice I can give. And I know it's hard because, like Cynthia said, you're in a hurry or you're overconfident or you don't think it can happen to you, but it can. Like she said, the sponsored links, suspect. Scroll down. Go find the unpaid ads. Make sure pay attention to your spelling and your .coms and stay vigilant.
I would like to change the shame people feel. I understand it. It's embarrassing because we have heard it before. Every member of my team has a story of something that they've fallen for or somebody close to them has fallen for. Anybody can be scammed. And say, it's organized crime. We are outgunned. They know what they are doing. They are professionals. I would like people to not be embarrassed by it. And I would invite anybody listening, use this program as the opportunity. If it can be embarrassing to say, you know, because you feel vulnerable, then use us. Use this as the opportunity to have that conversation with your friends and your family. Hey, I heard this. We need to be careful. Hey, one of the things, I'll give a concrete suggestion people can do. One of the things scammers love is a natural disaster because everybody's confused, everybody needs help, and everybody wants to help the people they know in the area affected. So they love to impersonate your loved ones and get you to send them money. So what are we going to do? The next time there's a blizzard, have this conversation with your family. The next time there's a blizzard, how are we going to confirm that you are the one asking me for help? Because I do want to help you, but I am going to check it out. If I get a call that you've been arrested on spring break, I am going to call your parents and check it out. But what's the plan? Make a plan. However you're going to do it, make a plan. And use us as the excuse to have that conversation so it's not embarrassing. And don't be embarrassed. Be angry.
I just want to add to that. My family and I, we have a safe word, if you want to call it that. If I ever call my mother or my brother or a friend in an emergency situation, what's the safe word?
So if someone were to pose as you and they said, I need help, they know to ask a question to get you or whoever it is to say that word. And if they don't say that word, then they'll know it's not really you.
Right.
It's a very clever trick. Hopefully others, if you haven't adopted that approach just yet, if you haven't taken up that technique, that is definitely a good one to be able to incorporate, just so you know that whoever you're speaking to is who you want to be speaking to.
Right, because there are going to be situations where your family member doesn't have their phone and they have to call from another line.
Right.
Or some situation like that. So you want to make sure, I mean, you have to stay vigilant and watch against the unknown numbers, but at the same time, that could be a family member that's in trouble. You want to make sure you're there for them. So the way to potentially go around the scammer is to have a safe word.
Right. And you guys mentioned being embarrassed earlier. I have been embarrassed, but I'll admit to the public right now that I have fallen for something. And it wasn't that long ago. I thought I was smarter than that. I was in a situation where I didn't have anything to do that evening and decided that I was going to take my kids to a game. I went on Craigslist, probably a red flag right there, and I found someone and I'm thinking, we could go to a game. If someone's trying to get rid of some tickets, maybe I can help them by taking some tickets off their hands while at the same time it gets us out of the house. And I fell for sending them some money to get some tickets and I never got those tickets. It was a spur of the moment thing. And Cynthia, you mentioned the emotion. Sometimes we have an emotion attached to it. We want to help someone else. We've fallen in love. We've got this desire to go out and do something nice for someone else. And then we find out that what we've done has now put us in a position where we might lose some of our money. So once again, if you don't have your own story yet, use mine, that it doesn't matter how much you know about this stuff, you still can fall victim to it. So I'd like to ask you all, what advice would you give someone who is feeling embarrassed about getting caught up in something like this?
I'm going to echo what Cynthia said, in that, you know, it happens. It's unfortunate. And we are outgunned. We are outnumbered. And they're very thorough and they have their playbook. It isn't something to be ashamed of.
I want to echo something you just said, Artrell, that, and reframe it. Let's reframe it that they are taking advantage of your good instincts. The fact that you love your kids and want to give them a good experience. The fact that you love your friends and family and want to help them when there's a disaster. And that's actually something I learned from a friend of mine, that her parents got hit with what they would call a grandparent scam, got a call from their grandson that he was in trouble. Don't tell mom and dad, please send money. And they were coached that the bank is going to tell you that this is a scam. Just don't tell them what you want the money for. And they went and lied to their banker to get the money. Luckily, they did catch it before they gave the money away.
Wow.
One of them realized what was going on. But the way my friend framed it to her son was, look how much your grandparents love you. That you know they're honest people. They never lie. Not only were they going to give away their life savings, they lied to people for you. So it's, don't let them make you ashamed of the good instincts they're playing on.
Great message. And I appreciate you sharing. And that leads us to that lesson of the segment, in which it can happen to anyone, but it's important to report it. Don't keep it to yourself. Make sure that if something weird seems to happen with your banking accounts, or like in my situation where I sent someone money and then ended up finding out that I wasn't going to get the tickets, report it. Report it to the customer service organization. You can report it to Venmo, even though they may not give you your money back. At least they know that this is an account that's been reported as one taking money from people for tickets or something like that. You can report it to the Better Business Bureau in certain instances. There are lots of different places that we can report it to. Once again, I'm Artrell Williams, and I'm in the studio with Nicole Clifton and Cynthia Stewart, and we're talking about financial crimes and scams. Cynthia informed me about crypto ATMs. Cynthia, would you tell us a little bit about what's happening with that, as well as some of the other ways that you see that the technology has evolved to try to scam us or allow us to be scammed?
Yeah. So you probably heard the stories of scammers trying to get people to buy a bunch of gift cards. Mm-hmm. The new iteration of that, gift cards are on the out now. The new iteration is crypto ATMs. So they look just like ATM machines. But you put your money in, convert it to cryptocurrency, and then send it to someone. You can spend it or whatever, but crypto is not regulated. It's virtually untraceable. And so scammers love it. They can get you to put cash or use your debit card to put cash in, and they're popping up everywhere. I did a quick search before I came in here. There are a dozen crypto ATMs within walking distance of this studio.
Wow.
Some of them are in banks, but a lot of them are in bodegas, convenience stores, gas stations. You can find them in Walgreens and CVS. They even have teller service at Walgreens and CVS, little customer service with your scam. So that is the newest thing, is to try to play on the mystique of crypto, but really it's just another untraceable way that they can whisk your money away. In ways that it can't be traced, and so you can't get it back.
Wow. And you said 12 near here, not
yeah.
just in the city of Buffalo.
Oh, no, within walking distance of here.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Now, you also mentioned that there are scammers posing as people who are there to help.
Yeah. The most diabolical story I think I've heard so far is a woman who was approached by someone claiming to be an agent of the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC.
Wow.
And this fake agent said, we have traced a bunch of scammers. They are about to target you. We are about to sweep them up, but we need just a little more evidence. So we want you to play along with their scam, and that'll give us the evidence we need to put them in jail. And then his partners came in and scammed her. And they did this dance back and forth. They had her going for 6 months.
The scammers engaged with her for 6 months as they tried to do what they were trying to do.
Yeah. They stole $85,000, took out loans in her name, and she's stuck with that debt. She refuses to declare bankruptcy and get out from under that debt. So she feels like she's got to pay off the scammer's debts.
Oh, wow.
And she's also lost her trust in law enforcement because it was law enforcement, fake law enforcement, but that approached her in the first place.
Right. So we started out the conversation talking about these scams that are happening in general, the ways that they're happening, the different methods that are being delivered in order to allow them to happen. We didn't talk about my favorite term, pig butchering. We talked about the fact that it happens, but those people who texted me that I mentioned earlier were trying to fatten me up. They wanted to get me sucked in deep enough so that they could take as much as they could. So you can get more information about a topic like that. Pig butchering is the name of that scam, but there's so many more that we've talked about today. We've talked about some of the resources that are available to assist. And before we close out, I just want to give you both the opportunity to share any additional words of wisdom with the audience before we end the show. So if you would, either one of you can start with, what do we do now? What do I do with this information that I've been given, and how can I make sure that I don't get scammed again?
I would like to take this opportunity to talk to you about what you just mentioned there, pig butchering, about fattening you up. I think for me, that's one of the scarier scams that's going on right now because it's so extended. It starts out so not innocent, but so nonchalant. And then all they have is time. So they just continue the conversation and continue the relationship until you get psychologically and emotionally involved. And then they start going in for the money. So I just think that that's kind of one to be aware of, that this person's not your friend. Yeah. And they're never going to be your friend.
Well, and I'll add to that, the pig butchering scams can be very elaborate, and they play on that human desire to be smart. So they'll make fake crypto exchanges and show you how much money you're making to get you to invest more. So it's playing on the get rich quick. The last thing I want to end with, I mentioned it already before, the Internet Crime Complaint Center from the FBI, ic3.gov. There's also reportfraud.ftc.gov. That's the Federal Trade Commission. A lot of people don't report these crimes because it's unlikely you're going to get your money back. The reason it's important to report it anyway is because it does help them discover the same crypto wallets are being used over and over again. The same phone numbers are being used. It does help them find these larger criminal conspiracies so that they can build the case. If they're in the U.S., they can shut them down. If they're abroad, they can work with international partners. But they've got to build a big enough case to justify putting resources towards it. So even though you don't get your money back, share your story, let other people learn from it, report it, help the government do what they can.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate both of you taking the time to be here today. I appreciate all of our listeners for sticking around, and hopefully we've given you something that helps prepare you for any of these attacks that someone might try to bring on you. We hope that you stay vigilant, as was said earlier, and protect yourself. So we want to thank you once again for joining us for today's episode of What's Next. Once again, I've been Artrell Williams. We thank you, and we'll see you next time.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.